Train, your community resource podcast series. I am Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is Mr. Patrick Irvin, Mr. Jamie Bashan. Remember, the Freedom Train is sponsored by PAX Inc. That's PACCSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. That's pactsinc.org. Also, visit our Freedom Train website. Remember to visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can listen to the playbacks of your favorite shows, learn more about your hosts, and, you know, just explore the Freedom Train world in the website and see what we have coming up next. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Follow us on Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Like our Freedom Train Network Facebook page. And last but not least, subscribe to the Freedom Train, either iPhone or, either on the Google Play Store or iTunes. You can subscribe to the Freedom Train in that. That way you get the episodes coming straight to your phone and you all good. So, Jaime, Patrick, what it look like?
What you call him?
Man, it's all good on my side. What it look like, Pat?
I call him Jaime.
I heard that. I ain't paying no, giving no credit.
Hey, man. That's the Latino in you, man.
I know, right? That's why people be like, Jay, your grass looks so good. That's when the Jaime come out.
Hey, man, there you go. There you go, man. Lawn care is essential.
I like that shit a little too much, though. What's up, Pat? All quiet, trying to sound sexy and stuff. It's good.
Nah, man, I'm chilling. And I got my sinuses acting up, so that's what that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, been on that booger sugar, huh? You got that permanent cold. Yeah. You got that Bobby Brown.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
First of all, I just want to say crack is whack.
Right. That's why you got to stick with the powder.
Yeah, buddy.
And Bobby Brown is the king of R&B. That's not
right. Hey, I'm glad you said it. I'm glad you said it. Because Bobby Brown is truly the king of R&B. And if you don't believe it, that's because something wrong with you.
Oh, man, that's funny.
Shout out to Whitney Houston. We love you.
Yeah, true.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, man. So, man, what the hell been going on with y'all, man? We had a social discussion show in a while, so we're going to make sure we get into the discussion. But before we get into the discussion, man, what the hell been going on with y'all? How's life? Like, everything is everything?
Everything, man. Just staying on the grind, trying to lay low and trying not to choke everybody out after reading the news. So every day it's a new alert on some bullshit, so we'll get into it.
To my like out there in Texas, or just because you know you in Texas, so
just period, man. Much stuff that's going on since we did like a last one of the, you know, little social commentary joints we do. So we got a lot to talk about, fellas.
But you know, because you got to be specific, because you know Texas is like a whole nother country, so
man,
you got to be specific.
What I'm starting to figure out, man. Texas could be a whole separate country if it was up to Texans. They will recede from the union.
God damn right.
Yeah. This place crazy, man.
You got them right. We don't need no damn United States. We can run this.
They need to just go ahead and give Texas back to Mexico.
Man, you go to West Texas, it is pretty much Mexico. Mm-hmm. Hell, we got a state called New Mexico. Nah, get that back, son.
God damn right. It's our state now.
Yeah, Texas back to Mexico, And give Southern California to Mexico too.
Except for San Diego. San Diego's beautiful. I can't agree to that. I can't.
Hey, so Mexico ain't a lot of beautiful cities?
Not, hey, they can take LA all the way up, but we're going to annex San Diego. Damn that.
That's messed up. Hey, man, Pat. So today, you know, we want to jump into a couple little topics that's been happening since the last time we had a chance to have a social discussion show. And, you know, we want to introduce something to y'all called Man, Sit Your Ass Down. But we're going to get into that a little later. But before we get into that, Pat, could you give, you know, we were talking earlier about the Paris Agreement. And for those who don't know what the Paris Agreement is, could you give us a little background on what that is, how it affects us, and the latest happenings that's going on with the United States and the Paris Agreement?
Yeah, so basically, the Paris Agreement was ratified in force in 2016, I believe. And basically, it was at the time an agreement made by 55 parties at a convention representing 55% of the global emissions producing countries in the world to cut their greenhouse gas emissions and to take care to try to change global industry and global economies in such a way that global warming could be slowed. And so basically it's an agreement where each state or each nation identifies what they believe to be an acceptable metric for cutting their greenhouse gas emissions and other things of that nature. And they begin to take steps towards moving their nations, industries, and economies in that direction. And again, basically the entire premise of the agreement is to reduce global warming or reduce the impact of humans, the impact that humans are having on our environment. So, to date, there are 147 parties, nations, states that are members that have ratified and agreed that they're going to follow through with what's going on with the Paris Agreement in and of itself. And the interesting part is just last week, Donald Trump, our illustrious clown of a president, who is determined to distract the American people from all the bullshit that their local congressmen are doing to them. But anyway, right, that's a whole other discussion.
Right.
He pulled the United States out of the Paris Agreement, basically saying that the agreement hurt the American economy and that it was costing Americans jobs, which on the surface may sound like it makes sense when you consider the coal industry and all of these coal towns that are no longer employed or, you know, that are on the brink of not existing anymore. The brink, I should say. But when you really dig into the numbers, you find out that the fact of the matter is coal is an expensive source of fuel compared to other things like greenhouse gases or not, I'm sorry, natural gases, which are not safe either for the environment, but they're a little bit safer than coal. And even solar power, like we were talking about earlier, solar power is getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper to the point where now people can afford to buy solar panels for their houses and reduce their electric bills by having solar panels attached to their houses. So the fact of the matter is greenhouse or green energy, if you will, is not, and the social appearance of it is not really what's destroying the coal industry. What's destroying the coal industry is the fact that other types of energy are cheaper than coal right now. So his entire premise for why he was pulling out makes no sense. And then beyond that, the Paris Agreement, again, is a set of standards that a country imposes on itself. So you look at your own economy, your own industry, and you say, okay, I can cut my greenhouse emissions by this much. So it's not like the agreement is saying you will cut your emissions by this much. it's basically an agreement that says, okay, we'll agree to cut our emissions by whatever amount we deem satisfactory for our economy and our industry. So just the entire premise that the agreement is hurting American society in any way is ridiculous. And on top of that, global warming, I hate to break this to Donald Trump, but regardless of how the causes of what global warming are, global warming is real. Like, it's really happening.
So
even if you want to believe that humans aren't a primary driver for it, because I've heard plenty of theories about the sun getting hotter, increased sunspots, the natural cycle of the weather patterns on Earth, all of which, you know, makes sense to a degree, wouldn't it still at least make sense to try to minimize your impact, even if your impact isn't a major impact?
Hell yeah. I mean, like, global warming is real, and it has a negative impact on the Earth, all the ecosystems. We can see like glaciers disappearing. You know, I think it's China, and some of the cities in China, motherfuckers walk around with smog mask on, and they have to buy air. Like, it's a lot of stuff going on that's messing up the atmosphere and the planet, and people have to get real. But it's almost like, you know, the people in Donald Trump's position, like the super rich, feel like money can change anything. And, you know, the United States getting out of this Paris Agreement, I mean, shit, you can't buy a new Earth. They do know that, right?
See, here's my thing. And, Pat, you kind of hit on this. I think a lot of people think the agreement was a legally contract-binding agreement, you shall do this. So the way it looks, the illusion of it is like, oh, we getting out of an agreement that was forcing us to do this. What this was pretty much people saying, you know what, hey, let's all work together, let's do what we can on our side to help reduce carbon emissions, X, Y, and Z. So a lot of people think like this was the law of the land, which is not. And secondly, a lot you would think the scientific community has come to a conclusion that, you know, carbon emissions, greenhouse gas, all that stuff, climate change, the warming of the planet, it's actually happening, and we've never seen anything like this before. But you still have those people who still go against what scientific findings we've had, the evidence we had, and I don't know what they're backing their opinion on. I would love to see the information, but I haven't seen much. So if the scientific community is saying, yo, global warming's real, why the hell are we still debating whether it's real or not?
Well, I mean, because those people have the power to say, well, this is real and this isn't real, because they are the ones who have the industries and the factories and all the other things that actually are really, really contributing to the destruction of the globe and the atmosphere and our ways of life. So, you know, these people are going to have pushback because they're seeing that, you know, it's an impact to their dollars. And
absolutely,
to them, dollars are more important than breathing. Dollars are more important than, like, a healthy earth. And that's one of the issues. You got sick-ass people in charge of these corporations and companies, and here we are. And you elect dumbasses like Trump, who still, like Pat said earlier, still is more of a distraction than anything. So,
and honestly, you know, with President Trump and all that kind of stuff, we got a whole, you know, who's the guy they put in the Department of Energy? Used to be the governor of Texas, that idiot. Can't remember his name. But
Jethro.
We got, who was it?
Jethro.
He said Jethro.
I just threw out his name.
I forget his name, but he's over the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, and all that kind of stuff. And you know what I'm talking about?
Ed something?
I can't remember his name. He's some religious freak, man. Dude's weird. And he knows nothing about the environment whatsoever. The guy, he only got hired because he's rich. But here's my point. When you got people like that are heading the Environmental Protection Agency, you got all these lobbyists that are coming in there saying, oh, this is wrong because now we got to reduce that. We can't run our factories and just pollute up the air. And I don't know what people's obsession with coal is, but coal is terrible. I mean, if we if we're literally going to go back depending on coal as the number one source of energy, hell, let's just start putting lead back in gasoline. Shit, why not?
I mean, but that's the other crazy part. When we're fighting to defend an industry that literally kills people.
Right.
You know, like coal miners are not healthy.
Black lung. Why would you want that shit?
Well, that's how we've always done it, right? Why? I mean, shit. Why we got to change?
Who's in a rush to get black lung? Like, coal is not that lucrative for the workers. Like, come
black
on.
Black lungs is American.
The crazy part about that is to listen to coal workers talk about how much they hate the Affordable Care Act. Like, if you think that if anybody would be for mandated, you know, health policies,
yeah, it would be them.
And minimal health, you know, shit. I'm trying to say so much that my brain is just moving to overdrive. But you think that if anybody would be in support of mandating that insurances cover a certain set of conditions and mandating that insurances have to cover you, it would be somebody that's been working in the field for 10, 15 years that's going to give them black lung, that's going to give them some sort of fucked up ailment to where prior to the Affordable Care Act, they could be kicked off their policy for getting it or not even being given a policy for getting, you know, for working in that field. You would think that, though, but it doesn't. And I think, again, it goes back to Americans are so short-sighted. And I say that as an American. We are so short-sighted. To us, I can breathe fine now, so I don't see what the problem is. And yeah. I think that, like, boils that. I think that is, like, the at its bare, at its bare bones root level, that's what the problem is. Well, I can breathe now. I don't see what the problem is.
And my thing is, to that point, we got to be forward thinking. Like, come on, man. Like, clean energy. That's a industry that's kind of, you know, still in its infant stages. Has so many different options you can go to. Solar. You got wind. All that kind of nonsense. Why not invest in that now? That way we can see the benefits years on down the line, and we're the leading world power in clean energy. That's an economic advantage, strategic advantage, all types of advantages. So I don't see why we would want to go back to, you know, the Stone Age when we got options. It's just, yeah, they kind of, some of them kind of are expensive right now, but the more you invest into those things, the cheaper they get, and more industries you create from that. So I don't. Why the fuck would you go back to coal? That's just stupid.
Because that's how we've always done it, damn it. And we're going to do it how we've always done it. Don't matter if it don't make no damn sense or not, we're going to do it. Okay?
And it just, I don't know, just being, you know, we're supposed to be the world leader, and to see somebody like a whole administration kind of deny climate change, global warming, man, and whatnot, that's kind of dangerous.
Asia been showed America they won the world leaders a long time ago. So,
well, I think at this point we have to accept the fact that America is no longer the world leader. And if it is, it's a declining empire. And America, you know, that's a concept that we struggle with, because a part of our national pride is that we're better than everybody else. And
right
now, you know, we got to accept the fact that we had our time on top. Right now, our military has extended our time on top a lot longer than it would have been without our military. And, you know, you can afford to do that when you're spending damn near half of your budget on defense. You know, you can afford to have your military be the backbone of your strength around the world when you're spending that much of your money on defense. And it also gives other nations the luxury of spending less than 1-2% of their national budget on defense, because they know, you know, if you're friends with the big kid on the block, you don't got to work out. So I think all of those things play into the fact that America has been allowed to remain in this position for a long time. But you got other countries out there now, like Russia, like China, who is the emerging superpower, like it or not. China is going to overtake America as the world leader, especially with Trump pulling us out of the Paris Agreement and pretty much defunding the EPA. I think he cut the EPA's funding by like 20% in his budget proposal. Like I was telling Joe before the show started, damn near 80%, I believe, or more, of all solar panels made in the world are made in China. They are capitalizing, cornering, and they have a stranglehold on the emerging green energy economy. And you apply that with the sheer number of people they have, over a billion people in China.
Yeah.
You combine that with their technological innovations, their educational insight, and everything else they got going on over there. Like, right after I finish learning Spanish, I'm learning Chinese, both Mandarin and Cantonese.
See, to me, it kind of puts us back. Like, it's going to, by pulling out this agreement and not investing in, you know, clean energy and stuff like that, it's definitely going to set us back, like you said. And once your boy, the billionaire, Elon Musk, am I saying it right?
Yeah, Elon Musk.
That guy. He has, I mean, if you look at his website and some of the things he has solar panels that are like a house tile on top of the roof tile. I said house tile. Roof tile that are solar panels that bring energy to batteries into your home to where you can power your home for a whole day and have a backup battery to power it at night and stuff like that. By pulling out this agreement and not investing in things like that, that's setting us back. As a nation, that's making us weaker, but people don't see that. You know, it just looks like we pretty much backed out of a handshake agreement. That's all we did.
Well, one of the issues is, like, here domestically in our country, like, we buy into the bullshit of America being this such great country, this such advanced country. Like, because people still really like believe that America is just so technologically advanced and economically advanced and all these other nations, which is not fucking true. Like, we in trillion-dollar debts and shit with nations. Like, how the hell are we still number one? Like, our education is low. Like, a lot of shit is low in America. Crime is high. Like, we lead motherfuckers in crime and locking people up. Like, we world leaders in that, but America has always the dominance and the prominence and the moral fabric of America has always been a damn illusion. Now, at one time, America did have, you know, the economic power, and America's military is still, you know, that might. But America has, for the most part, especially for Americans here, it's all been a lie. Like, Americans have been brainwashed and thinking that this is what it is, and they've been lied to. So that's why people still hang on to those old school ideas, those old things that make America great again, when America was never great in the first place.
Well, the interesting part is we talk about America during its heyday, which, you know, was during the World War eras, you know, when America really came into prominence. The interesting aspect of that is, you know, you rarely ever hear conversations where we talk about, in a total picture, how America actually came to be the dominant world superpower. When you look at the World Wars were fought on the soil of every major power in the world but America.
Right.
It's easy to become a superpower when all of the other superpowers have all of their factories bombed and blown up. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying that is the sole reason why Americans became the superpower that America is. I'm definitely not taking away from the ingenuity and the innovations that we've made as a nation. But let's be real. If you're a kid on the block lifting a lot of weights to get strong, and your goal is to be the strongest kid on the block, and all of the other kids in the competition break their arms, you got an advantage. Let's just be real. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, that's the truth.
Facts. But hey, you know what? In 5 I'll be inhaling coal and leaded gasoline, and everything will be fine, man. Don't worry about it. Hey, one thing before we get off the climate change. One of the senators, I forget his name, it was a congressman or senator, I can't remember, but he was kind of just like, God's going to fix the planet. Like, that was somebody's alternative or answer to climate change. God's going to come down here in the 60s.
God's going to come fit. So God later than the motherfucker then. So God just seen all the shit that just happened and said, you know what, fuck it. This ain't really that bad. Let me wait till goddamn the climate get messed up to come on down and fix the planet. Never mind all the foul shit that's just going on. Like, come on, dog.
All I know is a Christian politician said that. I forget his name, but stop that. Sit your ass down.
Yes, please.
Yeah, man. Please. Sit your dumb ass down. Please sit your dumb ass down. Because, I mean, you know, but it's also like Americans refuse to change because Americans don't want to give up their comforts.
Absolutely. That's what part of being American is, you know, relying on those comforts, having that little safety net and thinking you're number one and that confidence boost. That's what it is.
I have to be better than the next. And if I'm not better than anyone else, I'm a nobody. Like, you ain't, you still ain't shit. Sit your dumb ass down.
Yeah. I mean, that's a critical component of the American psyche is, and I won't say all Americans, but I will say the dominant majority of the American psyche, i.e. especially conservative white people. Yeah, I'm gonna put that out there. They have to feel like they are the best, and that like that's a core part of their world belief, and to say otherwise would be akin to walking up to a Christian and telling them Jesus ain't real.
Yeah.
They don't know what the fuck to do with that statement.
Wait, yeah.
America's not the best? That does not follow. I do not follow that whatsoever.
America has always been at the forefront of everything, morally, everything. Like, how the hell are you at the forefront morally when slavery existed in this country and y'all still perpetuating this shit? Like, come on, man. Come on. Hey. Like, America, but Americans do love to be lied to. You know? I'm American too, so Americans do love to be lied to. So.
That's just people in general, hell.
Alright, so while we on the subject of people being lied to, I saw a hilarious interview between Richard Spencer, Charles Barkley, and the other black dude. I forgot his name. I have no idea why the hell TBS gave Charles Barkley a TV show talking about any social issue. That's first of all. Charles Barkley shouldn't be on TV talking about anything outside of basketball. But nevertheless, I guess TBS said, hey, I want to let this Negro entertain y'all before we throw his ass away. So I guess whatever. So Charles Barkley and Richard Simmons and the other black dude, Richard Spencer, excuse me, Simmons, Spencer, same thing. But Spencer, Charles Barkley, and unknown black dude sitting down talking and talking about race and racism and all the issues that's going on. And if you don't know, Richard Spencer is like one of the leaders of the alt-right movement, the person who coined the term alt-right, and basically talking about the whole objective and the mission of alt-right. And he blatantly said it's world domination. And he told Charles Barkley, no, all other, you know, and of course this statement isn't true, but Richard Spencer said all groups of human beings have enslaved other groups, and the white people just done the best job at dominating people. You know, Charles Barkley was talking about equality and justice and all that for all people, and Spencer laughed at him. Was like, basically Spencer was like, bitch, shut your dumb ass up. Ain't no equality. We got all this power. Why the fuck would we give y'all this power? That's basically, I'm just saying how I felt like Spencer should have said. So basically, we have all this power. We've acquired all this power. Why would we give you this power? Our mission is to dominate you all and keep dominating you. And the look that was on Charles Barkley's face was priceless, because my thing is, well, what the fuck did you think they thought about us? Like, so you thought because you run down the court and put a ball in the hoop that everything was cool? Like, nothing has changed out of all them goddamn points, all these black athletes have scored. Nothing has changed. Like, that man gave you, gave him, I don't know how, I don't know if Charles Barkley believed it or not. It was very, very, very enlightening and funny to me, because it's like, it go back to Neely Fuller. If you don't understand the system of white supremacy and racism, everything else will confuse you. And Charles Barkley was sitting up there confused, because he really thought that he was going to be able to come to some common ground with this white man. And Richard Spencer, like, bitch, why do I need to come to common ground with you when I'm above you? I'm better than you, and we dominate you. We're going to continue to dominate you while you live off this dream and this lie of what America should be, and I live in what America is. So. I thought that was hilarious. Did y'all have a chance to see that, and what y'all thought?
I saw it, and I couldn't stomach too much of it, because it's just the substance of, first of all, if you know anything about Richard Spencer, every time that guy opens his mouth, it's just complete bullshit. And secondly, if you ever seen Charles Barkley open his mouth, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be complete bullshit if it's not about basketball. So, for one, I think the whole concept of putting Charles Barkley on the show to talk about race in America was like, come on, seriously? All the damn people, all the people you could have picked, you picked Charles Barkley. That right there lets you know that this wasn't anything they thought would be serious or something they take serious themselves, whoever put together this idea in the show. Charles Barkley, out of all the scholars and thinkers we have about race issues in America, the one person they're going to handpick is Charles Barkley. Like, the one person we handpicked to be a relationship expert is Steve Harvey. Like, wake the hell up, man. It's like, I encourage people not even to watch the show, number one, because Charles Barkley cannot intelligently convey anything that's going on in black America. I don't know what Chuck's issue is. I don't know how he grew up. But whatever the case may be, Chuck needs to get his Negro wake-up call and get it soon, because I guess all those rebounds, donuts, and money, he lost the concept of what's really happening in America. Well, so, fuck Charles Barkley for doing
Chuck
that, number one.
Chuck is definitely another, you know, candidate for the Sit Your Dumbass Down Award.
Yep.
But, you know, I think he's one of those people who, he said it himself. He's gotten more help in his life from white people than black people. And that statement really frustrates me on a lot of levels. Because, one, it completely ignores the fact that, A, there are more white people than black people in America. Therefore, the chances of you receiving assistance is going to be greater. And, B, white people own most of the shit. So, you know, like, they have stuff that they can help you with. If you need a bag of chicken, I'm sure a black person will help you out. Because every black person got a bag of chicken frozen in their freezer. But if you're looking for real opportunity, you can't compare a group that doesn't really have access to opportunity to a group that has access to opportunity and say, well, the people that don't got opportunity ain't never helped me get opportunity, so I don't feel like that. Like, that statement in and of itself is retarded. And as far as his Negro wake-up call, he's in the same boat as Steve Harvey. Because they have such reverence for the white people that have helped them, and because they can't understand that racism is a group thing and not an individual thing, therefore, in ergo, you can have nice white people that get it and that truly want to see equality, and they are out there. But at the same time, that doesn't mean as a culture that white supremacy doesn't exist and that black people aren't facing a lot of additional obstacles just for being black. So they can't grasp onto those concepts, because they don't, every time they think about white supremacy, their mind flashes to the few white people they know that have been nice to them. And people like that, you're never going to reach. And people like that always seem to have a platform, because white people, again, have the resources to give them a platform. And the things they say make white people feel good about being white. At the end of the day, that's what it boils down to.
Even in that, like we've said about Steve Harvey, come on, Charles Barkley, before white people even start fucking with you, it was nothing but black people in your life. You from goddamn Alabama, man. white people, you grew up in the time where white people wasn't even fucking with niggas like you, Charles Barkley. Let's just be real. So, but and if it wasn't for your skill at basketball, white people wouldn't fuck with you, Charles Barkley. It's solely you're in this position because of your God-given abilities, which black people help you cultivate before white people start messing with you. Now, all your fame and all that stuff there, of course, if black people owned the NBA, black people would have been helping you. But, you know, like you said, it's just like he's saying that same thing as saying, hey, when I walk outside and it's raining, I get wet. Like, you're supposed to. Like, that happens. But it's like people like him. I'm glad Richard Spencer said that to him. Now, whether Charles get it or not, that's his business. But I'm glad because I just like to see the look on his face. But it's like it's a reminder to people who had not stuck too far white people's ass that no matter what happens, no matter what position you think you gain in this country, you're still a nigga to these white people. And Richard Spencer said it. Their job is to dominate you. It's not to be friends with you. They elevate people like Charles Barkley to keep the illusion going. But total domination is totally happening. And if you could not play basketball the way you play basketball, if you're just some regular Negro, white people would not fuck with you. Charles Barkley, sit your dumb ass down, man. Please. Sit your dumb ass down, cause stuff like it's just stuff like that. Come on, man, we have to do better.
I am happy them black people let his ass have it. That church in Baltimore, though, all that.
Oh yeah, I heard one black lady was giving them the business.
Yeah.
I heard about that.
I ain't gonna do nothing for his affection and affinity to black people, but at this point, fuck it. Somebody need to read him his rights. So if it gotta be us, then it gotta be us.
I mean, but essentially, though, black people, we don't need damn Charles Barkley. We don't need Charles Barkley. We don't need Steve Harvey. We don't need Stephen A. Smith. We don't need these characters. Like, how are they helping us? Like, I give you, we'll take half of Steve Harvey because the program, the thing that he's doing for the young men. But before we give him that half, let's break down essentially what these young men are learning at this camp to actually help them become better black men in America to help enrich the black community rather than. Because Steve Harvey could be creating more clones of himself to go out and meddle in the white world and try to empower white people.
No, I don't give Steve Harvey that camp. And he is another candidate for the Sit Your Dumb Ass Down Award. But I don't give him that camp. I gave him that camp as, you know, whatever for me. All the way up until that shit went down with Paula Deen and he decided he was going to ship these black boys who was supposed to be coming to his camp to get prepared to be black men to a white woman who was in the middle of a heated situation at the time for her terminology and her use of racist terms. He was going to send these black boys to Paula Deen to learn how to cook. Not so you're not even sending these black boys to a black person. You're not sending these black boys to a man, even. You're sending these black boys to a white woman who is stuck in a time prior to the 1960s. Like, what sense does that? So at that moment, I was like, you know what? I don't even give him his camp. I think that camp need to be shut down at this point. I think the black boys are better off on the streets.
Yeah, you can't be filling their head with that dumb shit. Like, if I was on the parents, hey, hell nah. Nah. I don't give a fuck. Like, cause
Paula Deen house, he didn't even have Paula Deen come to the camp, to the ranch where he keep the boys. He sent the boys to Paula Deen. I would have went right to her house, knocked on her door, and said, "Give me my son."
Right. It's like, but parents, black parents, have to be more thoughtful about the things that's going on because. So many people are so enamored and hypnotized by Steve Harvey. They're like, Steve is such a great man. Steve is this and Steve is that. And he uplifts the community. Like, Steve Harvey has a morning radio show, and these motherfuckers still having prank phone calls. Like, we don't learn shit from that. We don't learn nothing from. You learn. I give DL. At least DL is using his platform to speak out. But Tom Joyner's show full of shit and Steve Harvey's show full of shit. Like, they're two grown-ass, old-ass men who know what's going on, know what time it is, and their show is nothing, it's trash. Like, we're learning nothing. Like, people's minds could be stimulated. Like, go to white radio. They can, like, white radio can afford to have those silly shows because look at the amount of white radio. Black radio can't. Our shows have to be focused on the empowerment of our people. And that's the problem. Like, everybody wants to escape the damn reality. Like, guess what? When you get through laughing, this shit is still here. Racism is still here. White supremacy is still here. Like, what the fuck?
Well, in Tom Joyner's case, his show might be mostly trash. And I'll say mostly trash because he does cover some topics in his show. And I'll give him credit for that. He does a lot of... he does donate a lot of money to the community. But I definitely agree with you. Our shows need to take themselves more seriously, and they need to take their platforms more seriously. We got far too many people that, and I'm not against the laugh. I love the laugh just as much as the next person. But we just have far too many people whose sole objective is to generate wealth for themselves through the black community by creating mindless laughter. You know, I just want to help people escape from their daily situation. In my opinion, that's part of the problem. There's too many motherfuckers trying to escape. You can't escape. Eventually, you're going to have to come back home, and you're going to have to deal with the shit. So why not deal with it now? That way, later on, when we truly want to have a moment, we are afforded that opportunity to have a moment that's not an escape, but a moment that's real.
I agree with that. No, I agree. I've never been a big Steve Harvey fan. I think anybody that's propped up by, you know, the dominant society or this person or that person, black people didn't really get Steve Harvey on the radio. I think black people connect with that. But him on that TV show and what he does on, like, mainstream TV is completely different than him on... Because I listen to the radio show every now and again, and you can tell it's two different people. At that point, you know, he's talking to his black viewers. He's a different way. But when he's on TV and stuff like that, he caters more towards, you know, his viewers. And his viewers are primarily a white audience and whatnot. So I get it, but we got to stop looking at cats like... The opinions of Steve Harvey and Charles Barkley, it's like that Chappelle skit when he was just like, hey, we got Ja Rule on the phone. Hey, Ja, what do you think about September 11th?
Right.
Man, you don't give a damn what Ja Rule thinks. Every time they go to Steve Harvey or Charles, nobody gives a damn what they think. And we shouldn't. That's the honest part. We shouldn't care what these guys think. They're not our scholars. They're not our voices. They're not the people who research or you know, are very versed in these topics to be speaking on these things. So we got to ignore some of these people that are put up there as puppets and just let them do their little corner.
We should ignore them, but it's difficult to ignore them when those are the outlets that we have, and those are outlets that people know about, and they're propped up the way they're propped up. And black people, we are the programming that we have as African Americans, like entertainment is so much a part of the programming that we have, is we go to it. Like, when you are legitimately asking somebody like Steve Harvey or what's the other motherfucking name? Wendy Williams, when you're asking them for like real life advice, like relationship advice, and like that's when you know it's going wrong. And like it's almost like I tell people all the time, I feel like we're in the zombie apocalypse now. Like, people, the mindlessness is here, and people are just running around looking for information. I feel like, you know, I always said it's like people are going in Wendy's asking for political information. Like, you want to know who the governor, you want to find out everything you need to know about the state government and stuff like that, but you go in Wendy's to get in line to find that information out. Like, you ain't gonna get it there.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, but, you know, that leads me to, I don't know which one. Which way should we go first? Should we get on Jason Lee Whitlock's ass first, or should we get on BCU's president first?
We'll say BCU to the end, because I know you want to go in on now. You graduated from the HBCU, so I know that's gonna be personal for you, man. So Jason Whitlock, man.
Jason Lee Shitlock.
Oh goodness. I'll start with this guy, and I'm not gonna give him too much words. It's because there's really nothing that hasn't been said about this guy already. To me, he's the equivalent of that dumbass sheriff that gets on Fox News and just hits on black people.
Can you give some background on him for those who may not know?
Oh, Jason Whitlock. Oh my goodness. The biggest thing you need to know about this guy, he's on what, Fox? Is it? He's on Colin Hurd, and he has his own show as well. And he got on Colin Hurd, and he was speaking about LeBron's situation where LeBron's house got vandalized. Somebody came in there and spray-painted the N-word all over the front garage or something like that. And he pretty much said that racism doesn't affect rich black people, that racism is a problem for the poor, and that this instance happening to LeBron was just merely an inconvenience for him, not a big deal, that LeBron has no place of speaking on racial issues, that was, he even said this is my area of expertise, we're talking about racial issues. So he pretty much just dismissed the whole notion of what happened at LeBron's house and LeBron's response to what happened at his house. And honestly, it was horribly offensive. His rhetoric is dangerous. Like I said, that guy on Fox News was the Sheriff Clark. He says a bunch of ignorant-ass stuff, and I think he caters to his crowd, which is primarily a white audience, because nobody fucks with Jason Whitlock like that in the game. There's even stories out there where other black commentators, African-American commentators, will refuse to work with him. That's why he's up out of ESPN, because they refuse to work with him.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. Yeah, they ESPN got rid of his ass because nobody was working with him. Nobody was messing with him because he was cooning. He was cooning harder than Stephen A.
And his statements, and this isn't the first time he said some ridiculous stuff. He body-shamed Serena Williams. I don't know how you can do that.
He did.
Oh, my, I don't. Let me go ahead and put this statement out there. He who doesn't like Serena Williams' body cast the first stone. That's what I say. That's in the good book right there.
Wait. Because I don't know this dude, so I'm learning as y'all are talking. How in the hell do you body shame Serena Williams? Like, how does that even occur?
Hold on. This dude is about 600 pounds, though, Pat. That's what you got to understand.
I saw him in the clip. But before we get into him, I'm trying to figure out what grown-ass man or even little kid boy, whatever, does not look at Serena Williams and think, oh, my God.
No, he said some pretty, like, it was bad.
Yeah, basically he was trying to say she don't look good in the little tennis outfits. Her butt is too big. She's
she
like
need
fat.
To lose weight. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
And it's like, bro, you ain't seen your, you haven't, dude. Not, never mind his him not seeing his dick. Dude ain't looked down and seen his knees in 15 years.
So he has a history. Even when Colin Kaepernick did the whole kneeling thing, I mean, you would have thought he was ready to just pull out some rope and lynch Colin Kaepernick the way he was capping out there and capping Save-A-Hole and trying to. It was bad. It was really bad.
Even speaking of Captain Save-A-Hole, when he jumped to Kristen Leahy's defense.
God.
All right, so check this out, Pat. So white chick Kristen Leahy, who's a co-host on Colin Cowherd's The Herd. Now, let me give you an idea of the setup of the show. Now, when the guests come in, they sit on the couch. And the couch is between Colin and Kristen Leahy. But the guests are facing Colin. So she's literally in the back of the show. Like, literally in the back of the show. So that shows you how important she really is. But she's on record and on camera for talking about LeVar Ball, basically saying he's a bad father, he's a bad influence on this kid.
Kids scared of him.
Yeah, his kids are afraid of him. Everything he's doing is wrong. You know, she crossed the line in a lot of things. She's saying, questioning his parenting style and saying that his children are definitely afraid of him. They don't think for themselves. They don't do anything for themselves. They only do what their father tells them to do. So LeVar went on the show to talk to Colin, and him and Colin was having their conversation, and they start talking about the price of those Zoe shoes, those Lonzo Ball shoes. And then she asked the price, and he told her, stay in your lane. And then he was like, hey, well, I'm not gonna talk to you. Matter of fact, I'm afraid of you. You know, matter of fact, I'm not gonna say anything to you because you know you over there extra aggressive. You're a pretty aggressive person, so I'm afraid of you right now. So she's trying to play as he was playing you know, victim. She tried to, you know, flip it and use her whiteness to play the white victim, and then they tried to call him sexist because she asked him something about women, and he was like, well, I don't have to focus on women. I'm not making the women's line. I'm making a line of shoes. And they tried to take it as, oh, LaVar Ball don't respect women and all these things here. And it's like Jason Whitlock basically was shit, trying to shit on LaVar Ball, and then Charlamagne gave him the donkey of the day, and then shit just started rolling from there. And then Jason Whitlock actually got donkey of the day like twice in the last 3 weeks. And you know, this time Charlamagne called Michael Eric Dyson on, and Michael Eric Dyson dumped on his ass. But yeah, the media, I call for, well, I don't spend too much energy, but black community, well, nobody knew Jason Whitlock had a show anyway. Like, nobody knew he had a show. So let's keep pretending like we don't know he have a show and don't watch his fat ass and let his fat ass sink and let them white people who he capping for us pretend like they like him, then they can kick his fat ass to the curb.
And my thing is, he's being propped up for a reason. And he has to understand that he's only going to be propped up for so long. He's going to say something stupid that's going to offend his handlers, and they're going to get rid of his ass like they got rid of Sage Steele and all these other people who gotten the fuck up out of here in the media game. But one thing about Jason Whitlock, man, and it's sad, like, it's sad, you know, because it's very rare, you know, you want to see another black man lose his job, but I hope that motherfucker gets fired. Like, I don't like, you know, putting that out there, but
homeless.
That's dangerous, man. Like, the stuff he's saying and the images he's putting out there of black people, again, just like Charles Barkley, man, you're not versed on this stuff. These aren't issues you should be talking about. Like, I even see Stephen A. Smith on Fox News now. Like, Stephen, sit your dumb ass down. But I'm like, you're not a politician. You don't know about this politics game. Like, sit your dumb ass down. Like, who's really listening to these people? So, like Joe said, man, ignore the hell out of that show. Don't watch it, and hopefully it'll get
you.
Yeah,
I say, you know, people should stop watching First Take. People should stop watching.
I don't watch that at all.
Like,
I watch Skip and Shannon now because that's better, way better than First Take.
Yeah, Shannon says a lot, but the jury's still out on Shannon.
I like Shannon, man.
Hey, but yeah, right. But we can't get lulled to sleep by people who sound good though.
Nah, but sometimes Shannon, like, sometimes more often than not, Shannon does get it right on a lot of issues. Now, I don't agree with everything he says, of course, but on main things, Shannon is getting right. Jason Whitlock and Stephen A. Smith, them dudes, like, every single time there's an opportunity to shit on a black athlete, they spread their butt cheeks
right
and go full.
No, yeah. And I'm with you on that. The main thing I say about people like Shannon, even like a person like an Angela Rye, talking heads, you're in positions to do more than talk, too. Now, let's remember that. Yes, use your platform to say the right things, but you're in a position to do more than talk. We have too many talking heads. We have so many intercursors. Because first of all, like, Shannon Sharp is a good voice for the sport community, but like, we have intellectuals.
Absolutely.
And we have people who've dedicated their careers and lives to this stuff. So we have a lot of intellectuals talking heads. We need more people on the ground organizing and really doing things, really using the resources that we have to make our communities better rather than just talk, because we can't just get lulled to sleep with just rhetoric. And I think that's where we get stuck at sometimes. The rhetoric is so good. Because, yeah, I'm not going to lie, Shannon say some good things, and I would watch Undisputed before I watch First Take. But we can't just get lulled to sleep by, all right, buddy, sound good. I like what he said, so we're going to rock with him. We're going to roll with him, because I don't know about y'all cities, but my city being gentrified like a motherfucker, and I don't like it.
And it's,
hey, man, like, and y'all two guys from this city, man, and, like, people in my city making me mad. It's like, we're not even organizing in this city to do the shit that we need to do, because we lulled to sleep by the entertainment aspects of everything. Everybody want to party. Everybody want to be entertained. And this, trust, it's nothing wrong with entertainment. It's nothing wrong with partying. But your ass can't be party and be entertained when the work ain't done, though.
And that's the thing, man. Sometimes, you know, you want that sedative because, you know, out here you got the hustle and bustle, you get beat to a pulp. So a lot of people want that sedative. But they also got to understand, even if they're not, you know, a part of an organization, work on yourself. If you can get yourself right, get your mind right, get in your studies, and as soon as you start changing your life around, you change your family around, that's how you rebuild your community. But you got to start with yourself and start going out and doing more things in the community. But back, I get what you're saying, and that's happening everywhere, the gentrification and these talking heads. They honestly do. I feel a lot of them are in a position to use their voice and platform to actually affect change on that basic level instead of just talking. It's cool to get on TV and, you know, shut down, you know, a Richard Spencer and X, Y, and Z. But it's one thing to go out there and actually elevate the community, elevate your people and all that good stuff. So I agree with you in that aspect.
Yeah, I mean, it's just we have these, use our platforms to get our voices out, but still go further, especially if you are unhappy with what you're seeing in your communities and in the areas that surround you. So, but, you know, Jason Whitlock is a... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say real quick, I will say in regards to the Jason Whitlock clip that I saw, the dude sounds like an idiot, but in that one clip, I understood the point he was trying to make. I just didn't like the way he was making the point. I don't know if he feels like that's his element, but it is clearly not your element. When you can say something, when you can attempt to say something as basic as wealth provides some insulation from racism, when you can make a statement which is as true and factual as that, but butcher it in such a way that everyone attacks you for saying it, you're obviously outside of your element. And at the core of what he was saying during that show, that was the core of it. Wealth does provide some insulation from racism, which is true. But, like, bro, you can't... Wealthy people still experience racism. They experience it every day. Wealth does not... Classism is not bigger than racism in America. A rich black person still doesn't have the types of opportunities that a white person has. Now, they have more opportunities than a poor person does, but they don't have the same opportunities that a white person does. Let's just be real.
Hey, he asked the dumbass question, though. He asked, well, how many of you would switch spots with a poor white person?
Yeah, that was stupid. That was stupid to me because I'm a poor black person. I'm not dirt poor, but look, I'm rich either. And I wouldn't switch plate. Like, that has more to do with your pride about who
anything.
You are and where you come from than it does about in it. Like, for you to say I would switch places with another person or another race of people, that doesn't only speak to the advantages that they have, but that also speaks to your self-esteem
right.
and your lack of self-pride.
It's one right. thing about that. Hold on. It's one thing about that interview that I felt like, because he sucks at talking, but it showed what I think a lot of African-American people in America kind of feel like, that the more success, which we equate success to material things and success, you know, you moving up out the ghetto, you going somewhere when you ain't got neighbors that look like you, and now you feel comfortable, you feel secure, you feel like you got your piece of the American dream, and now you feel racism isn't going to affect you because now you're in a good neighborhood, you're in good schools. What a lot of people don't understand, and it's something he brought up in that interview, he said Trayvon Martin was for, that was a gated community he got shot in.
Right.
A gated community. So I hope I would hope people would get out of that is, just because, you know, I'm not like Pat said, I'm not rich. You know what I'm saying? Hell, on the grand scheme of things, hell, yeah, I'm poor, but I'm not dirt poor or anything like that. But I still also know that the trickle-down effects of racism can potentially and will potentially affect my family and myself in the future. Just because I got a little money, I'm moving to a good neighborhood, got good schools, blah, 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 doesn't mean I'm absolved from feeling the effects of racism in America. We're in the system of racism.
let me ask this. Would we consider Dr. Martin Luther King poor or wealthy?
He died poor. Did he not?
Well, from my understanding, he was, even at the time of his death, he was earning over $200,000 a year, from my understanding. Especially for like the speaking engagements and stuff. Like they say he had money. I mean, that's probably something we need to look up a little more.
Maybe I need to look that up a little more. I thought was it Malcolm X or was it MLK? I know
Malcolm.
And Malcolm X, not a wealthy man by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. But I know Martin Luther King used to earn hundreds of thousands of dollars a year just from his speaking engagements. So if Dr. King was earning $200,000 a year, that means he's not poor.
Right.
Last time I checked, he was a victim of racism. His death was a racist act last time I checked.
No, it was a minor inconvenience.
Yeah, that's a minor. But you know, according to Jason Whitlock, you know, if you're rich, yeah, that's a minor inconvenience. So, I mean, a lot of things have happened to black people, regardless of your wealth. Like he used Oprah as an example, but you got Oprah on camera talking about her experiences being denied things because of her color. No, if he want, he want to. I guess to him, but I guess we all fucking up because we forgot that Jason Whitlock set the standards on shit in America. So that's where we fucking up at because we forgot about.
That's where I get back to this not being his area of expertise, regardless of what he wants to believe. Because, like Jamie said, he sucks at talking. These are very basic statements that you should be able to make without people misunderstanding you. Wealth provides some insulation from racism. Yes, it does. That's fact. But it does not provide a completely impenetrable shield against it. Wealthy black folks still experience racism. In terms of LeBron James being having the nigger spray painted in his house, did it prevent LeBron James from accessing any resources or from doing anything like that? No, it didn't. So in that vein, I think that was the point he was trying to make, was it didn't prevent LeBron James from doing anything. Now, the two problems with him is, one, he sucks at speaking, Jamie so eloquently put it, and two, it fails to really adequately understand the different levels of racism.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, just because you're denied access, just because you're not denied access doesn't mean that you aren't still affected by racism. It doesn't mean that different things people say to you don't still show that they are, in fact, racist and engaged in the system of racism. Just because when you were a kid, as he said in the clip, people would call him a nigger, and it was never that big a deal, doesn't mean that in the grand scheme of things and on a cultural level, that it's still not, you know, that it's not a big deal. It is very much a big deal when someone feels comfortable enough
to call you a nigger.
And call you out your name in a public space or in a private space.
And what the hell is wrong with you? Are you comfortable with them calling you that? But your individual experience and perception does not determine the overall experience and perception of all black people in America. Jason Whitlock does not determine what racism is. And then, like the statement LeBron made, he said he immediately thought about Emmett Till's mother and the things that Emmett Till's mother had to go through, and Jason Whitlock had a problem with that. First of all, Jason Whitlock, you can't tell nobody what the fuck to say. So shut your dumb ass up. Because if can't nobody tell you what to say, you can't tell nobody else what to say. But overall thing, and this is for people listening, you know, when LeBron said that, LeBron basically saying that no matter what, as a black person in America, if white people want to, white people are showing us that they can touch us at any time. that they can get us at any time they want to. They can cause bodily harm to us. They can do anything to us that they want to at any time, no matter their economic level. That's what he was speaking to when he said he felt like Emmett Till's mother. Because I'm sure Emmett, we all know before the incident with Emmett Till's mother and the family, that their mindset wasn't where it is now. Their mindset wasn't, on activism and making sure that we work to make sure that things are improved. But LeBron James, understanding that, being a student of history, as far as I know, he does know, study a lot of history. I'm not sure how much outside of sports history, but I do know that. But in that vein, being a parent. If they can do, they basically showed you, hey man, we can come mess with you at any time, because there are plenty of historical stories to show that. Even Black Wall Street, why didn't the wealth of Black Wall Street prevent them from racism?
Thanks.
And if you want to be honest, the black community was wealthier than the community that destroyed it.
Right.
The white people that destroyed them. And you can go even in terms of Wilmington. The massacre in Wilmington, North Carolina. The black community had comparable wealth to the white community. And that's the other part of it. A lot of the times when black communities are destroyed, they're destroyed by a white community that is upset because of the wealth of that black community. You know, like that, and I'm not saying every time, but I am saying it's a significant portion of the time. It either has something to do, most of the time, I will say, it has something to do with a white woman. But that anger is stirred up by the fact that these uppity Negroes have access to resources that us good white folk don't have. And that's anger. At that point, all they need is for a white woman to scream rape and use that as an excuse to go lynch somebody, kill somebody, fuck somebody up, how they see fit.
And that's what Charlamagne pretty much outlined, that old girl did to LeVar Ball. Are you threatening me? Even though anybody who watched that, he was saying, hey, yo, karma's going to come. Yo, I ain't worried about you. You're going to reap what you sow. That's what he was saying. Are you threatening me? And the one she said that, she just went into victim mode and, oh, he doesn't respect women, this, that, and all that. But Whitlock was just like, oh, no, LeVar Ball's on the line talking to him. He was like, he was on some real Uncle Ruckus type nonsense on that interview, man. That's who that dude reminds me of.
But it's like, but see, the thing is, like, people like him should not be able, like Stephen A. Smith, Jason Whitlock, should not be able to set foot into black establishments, black communities. You cannot sell the, like, black people, what the fuck is wrong with us? Just because a bitch is on TV don't mean that we have to get behind them. Like I was watching it was a roast of Emmett Smith. I was watching that this morning. Jamie Foxx was the host and that, all type of comedians, and Dick Gregory was on there, and Dick Gregory was talking about how, you know, he felt happy that black people and white people could be in the same space. And then he used Jackie Robinson. You know, Jackie Robinson was the main reason he integrated this, man. Look here, I respect Dick Gregory and everything, but Jackie Robinson is the worst example to be using, because it's like mindsets like his that help people like Jason Whitlock exist. Like, Jackie Robinson was a sellout, and people have to understand that. Don't look at this no way other way. Jackie Robinson was a sellout. Any black man who would leave a league, they had two Negro leagues, and he's the first one to leave. Jackie Robinson is a sellout. You do not leave your own to go be a part of somebody else's. Don't fall for that. But it's like, it's these mindsets of the, and I'm not putting Dick Gregory in this category with these other cats. Let me make that clear. I'm not putting Dick Gregory in the Jason Whitlock in them category. I'm just saying, with the statement that he said about Jackie Robinson, that made me think about all of this stuff with Jason Whitlock and these sellout coons. But it's the mindsets that these people have. And we have the ability to shut these people down. These people should not be able to exist or earn money if they're shitting on us black people. We have to wake up and do better. We can defend ourselves. Like, that's legal. It's okay for us to defend ourselves. But we cannot allow our own to shit on ourselves. They are Sambos. And if they've go to PAX Inc. and go to the code, and you click on the code tab, and they got a rule called the Sambo rule. And let me just give you a little bit of the Sambo rule. Sambo rule, any black person that proves to be against the community is not protected by the codes of conduct. So they not protected. Don't let these Sambos get away with this. Don't give them energy. Shut their ass down.
I'll agree with that.
So I guess last but not least, we got to get on HBCU. Got to get on BCU's president.
No, you know what? That's a good transition because Stephen A. Smith is constantly speaking at HBCUs. I know we focusing on BCU president for being what he is, but you know how I feel, Joe. Let's be real.
HBCUs will invite basically anybody to come speak. Let's just be real. Any black person on TV, HBCU is going to invite because they black and they're on TV. Let's just be real. Like, if you legitimately look at Stephen A. Smith and see what he's doing, and you want to have him talking to your children, then you don't get it. Stephen A. Smith cannot talk to my dogs.
Yo, Stephen's going to come at you. Patrick Joe. And I sit here right now.
Bring his ass. Bring his ass.
This sounds ridiculous, Skip.
I Googled you, Steve. You don't do nothing for the black community. You only thing on record that you've done, you donated $250,000 to your alma mater. Outside of that, what you do for the community. You're always talking about Chicago, but you ain't. What have you done to help improve conditions in Chicago besides have talks in Chicago?
About Stephen A. Smith is that he'll go toe-to-toe with any black person that dare call him out. And to my dying day, I will not let him forget when them white women came at his ass.
He shut the hell up.
He shut up and apologized real quick.
He garbage-ass Michelle Beadle shut him down. And if anybody know anything about ESPN, you know Michelle Beadle is F grade. And she shut him down.
So I'm not even... Like, Stephen A. is one of them people, if he came at me, I wouldn't even respond. I would just, I would just constantly put out the same statement. I find it interesting that Stephen A. Smith finds the time in his day to come back at another black person for disagreeing with his opinions. And he's never apologized to the black community for any of the fucked up things he said. But when them white women came after his ass, he was singing a different tune. That would be my repeated statement.
Now, what's crazy though is like, I forgot the HBCU. Was it family? I forgot the HBCU when Dr. Umar was going through his conscious stripper issues. One of the schools said that they didn't want him to come speak. But then it's not the same school, but Bessie DeVos is invited to speak. Like, but with these HBCUs, like some of the things I don't get it. Like I know at FAMU, like. FAMU would invite goddamn 2 Chainz. Like, the students would say, we want 2 Chainz, and they sign off on that. They'll invite, like, the worst rappers ever, but then you'll have people in the community who have good things to say, and they won't get invited. Like, HBCUs seem like they, if you're popular, they will invite you. That's the only prerequisite you have to have is just to be popular.
Hold on, so they didn't invite Umar because he's a single man and he smashed a stripper? Like, what's wrong with that?
Well, you know, they were going through that. Look. HBCUs have a lot to work on, but it's like, like BCU president, I don't know what the fuck he was thinking. Like, from my understanding, they had over 30,000 signatures saying that they didn't want the woman to come. And this fool brought her anyway. And then the people are showing you their disdain for her, and you're going to try to tell them, we'll mail you your degrees. Man, I would have got up and walked out that bitch. I wouldn't have showed up, first of all. Like, walking across that stage, let's just be real. We didn't all graduate. Walk across that stage ain't that fucking important. It really ain't. That shit really ain't. And at some point, black people, you have to take fucking stands. Like, you know you graduated. You know that. But at this time, if they're going to have this white woman at your graduate, this ain't BCU president graduation. This is your graduation. If they're going to have this woman at your graduation, you shut that shit down. Y'all have your own shit.
Yeah. That's
true. I wouldn't even show it up, to be honest. But, you know, a goddamn graduation ceremony is not that important to me. Long as I get my goddamn piece of paper, we straight.
Yeah.
Now, if you trying to tell me I'm not going to get my degree, I'm still not going to acquiesce to your demands. That just means I'm going to have to bust your ass while I'm doing what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he even felt comfortable enough in his community in South Florida to do some shit like that. I mean,
that show you
about
black people.
He's obviously fucked up. But what the hell kind of community do y'all have where HBCU president feels comfortable enough to go against the wishes of the community that his institution is supposed to be serving?
Right. Hey, in that regard, you make the institution feel the heat. As long as that motherfucker is there, you don't get support. Because obviously he cares nothing about the community. He cares only about making himself look good. Like, this ain't about you, bruh.
Bruh, if I had the power, I'm going to be honest. I'd have had every black person in America pull their kids out of BCC the next day. Everybody withdraw. Everybody transfer. It's a whole bunch of other HBCUs in the nation. They would love to have you.
It's too many. It's two more in Florida.
Right. Go to FAM. Shit.
Go to Florida Memorial.
Go anywhere. But stay out of BCC until that. Man, if I had the power, the attendance at BCC would have dropped from fucking whatever it is now to goddamn the four or five white students they got enrolled.
but overall, though, HBCUs have to step their game up. Like, overall. It's too many black people graduating from these HBCUs for black America to still have nothing.
You said something then, buddy.
Right.
I mean, it is. It is. Like, think about it. People bag on LeVar Ball for what he's doing to building a brand and the company and something to sustain not only his family, but hire a lot of black people, and they bagging on him, but they don't bag on these dumbass Negroes who come out of, I probably shouldn't have said that, but these dumbass Negroes who come out of the HBCUs who get these degrees and do nothing for the community. You do nothing for the community, but you always upset about things that happen to the black community and that happen to HBCUs, but you do nothing to help get them better. You don't. And you know you don't. And you always complain. You just sit around and complain. Like, when is stuff going to change from you complaining to actually taking action? If you mad that, if you, like all of us, like in Tallahassee, we do not like FAMU's Board of Trustees and a couple of other people that work up there at FAMU, but not yet have the people in Tallahassee come together to organize to get that damn board up out of there. Not yet. But I tell you what, let a motherfucker throw a party. Let Trick and Trina show up in Tallahassee. And that, I think that's the key. For Florida, period. For black people in Florida. For black people in Florida to get serious, we need to invite Trick Daddy and Trina to all our functions, no matter what. And that way, black people, we at least know black people will show up.
Oh, man, that's hilarious.
it's the truth. You know it's the truth. Y'all know we don't show up to nothing but the party.
You got to get booty down, baby.
Till it catches on, to be honest. Right now, it's very, very popular to bag on the black church. Like I said, I'm going to say it until somebody texts me on it, and I don't think nobody can. But right now, it's very popular to bag on the black church for all of their things that they don't do, that they could do, that they should do, that all different things we're mad at the black church about. But nobody addresses the fact that HBCUs are largely doing the exact same thing. They're largely doing the exact same thing as the black church. And as institutions, it's actually a little bit more disgusting that they're doing it. We're sold on this dream that education is the answer, education is the key. And we send our kids to these schools where they are provided an education that prepares them to get a job in a world that hates them. They take our money they don't care about the community, and I'm not talking about all of them. Obviously, there are some examples, but as you said earlier, Joe, there are far too many HBCUs and far too many HBCU graduates for the black community to still be in the conditions that it's in. The situation has reached ridiculous levels, and the fact that we continue to cater to these institutions, it's the same as how I feel about everybody that's rushing to put their money in black banks without ever checking the black banks for what they're doing with the money. You know what
right.
I'm saying? Like, stop giving people credit just for being black. That's not enough. If that was enough, we wouldn't be in the situation we in.
Well, you know, somebody, a black person on TV told them to do something, so they had to do it because that person was on TV. So you might have to.
If we really understand the culture of white supremacy racism, then we understand that all people can be participants. White, black, it doesn't matter because it's a culture. And cultures affect everybody. So you need to know when you're dealing with a dominant society that hates you where everyone stands that you interact with, regardless of color. Just because you're black like me doesn't mean that you haven't been infected with JRS or with some other form of white supremacy that would negatively affect my relationship with you. And until black people begin to understand that, you know, we go back to what Neely Fuller said. If you don't understand racism, white supremacy, everything else will only serve to confuse you. We give our money to black banks without making sure that they're investing it back into the community in a way that we find is acceptable. We send our kids to HBCUs without making sure that they're investing in the community in a way that we think is acceptable. We elect black politicians without, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The funny thing about that is the locations where there are black politicians in control, these are some of the worst black neighborhoods in the country. So obviously relying on skin color as some sort of indicator of where you stand socially is not working. Yet we continue to do it. You being black and me being black is not enough. I'm sorry. It is not enough for me to support you. It's not enough for me to stand behind you. It's not enough. I will give you the benefit of making the assumption that you got my best interest at heart because you're black, and I will have a conversation with you based off that assumption. Before I have any real interactions or business dealings with you of any nature, social or otherwise, we're going to have that conversation. Now, if you're white, I might not even take that step to go there with you. But if you're black, I would give you that courtesy, and I think that's all that's required, is to give somebody the courtesy of the opportunity.
But we should know enough about COINTELPRO now, in 2017, halfway through 2017, to know that just because somebody is black, and hey, we just spent 8 years with Barack Obama and shit got worse for black people. So, just because somebody is black, hell, look at Pastor Simmons. Pastor Simmons will fuck your wife and he black.
And he'll jump out that window on you.
So I mean, just because a person is black don't mean that they have your best interest. Don't mean that you should give them your support. We've been, it's enough history for us to study about black sellouts. Like every race of people have sellouts. So just because you look like me, don't mean I'm gonna follow you. Don't mean we're gonna be empowered because you're around. We can't. Come on, man. We can't be doing that, man.
I agree to that.
That was a great song.
That's
around and everybody women. It was great for the moment because it was funny as hell.
That came out of my camp.
I know, yeah. That came out of my camp. We made boy. Well, you don't tell nobody else that. Okay. Nobody, you should not be claiming shit, boy. Especially the stuff that come out of your mouth, boy.
Oh, man. Yeah, you're so funny. That's hilarious.
Hey, man. Man, y'all crazy, man. The black people in America, either wake up or continue to get your ass stepped on.
That's a fact.
That is. See you when we see y'all.
And real quick.
Go ahead.
The BCC president is also a candidate for the Sit Your Dumb Ass Down Award.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we're giving y'all the candidates for the Sit Your Dumb Ass Down Award. And eventually we're going to give y'all the winners of the Men's Sit Your Dumb Ass Down Award. So BCC, we got BCC president. We got Charles Barkley. We got Jason Whitlock. Who else we got?
Stephen A. Smith. Man, we can go on.
Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah, we're going to have to do a voting contest on this one right here.
Yeah, Stephen A. Smith. So, yeah. What we should do, probably put out a Twitter poll on y'all ass. Put out a Twitter poll and see.
Yeah, put out some sort of poll and do it like monthly.
Yeah, let it compile up so at and at the end of the month we'll see who y'all vote for the Sit Your Dumb Ass Down Award. So be looking out for the Twitter poll that we're gonna put out. And remember, you can follow the Freedom Train at Freedom Train Net on Twitter. So be looking out for that Twitter poll of the Man Sit Your Dumb Ass Down Award. man, it's gonna just bring a little more excitement to the show, man. And make sure you tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to tell another friend to tell a whole nother friend about the Freedom Train, because we are here, we are the voice of the people, and we're making sure that we're getting the information out that we need to uplift and empower ourselves and our communities, because that's what we do. I'm Joseph Ward, he's Patrick Irvin, he's Jamie Bashan, and we get down how we get down.